cycles that are going on inside the phosphorus cycle then. Your plants need to take in phosphorus. They've got to build the nucleic acids. And the form that they're going to take in is then the dihydrogen form of that orthophosphate anion. So orthophosphate sitting down here, this is then the hydrogen phosphate, and this is then the dihydrogen phosphate ion. So for a plant to take in this, what they do is deliberately secrete into the soil water in proximity to the fine roots, acid. That acid then is able to protonate any orthophosphate that's present and turn it into the appropriate form that they're able to uptake. Now the phosphorus is going to the ocean then. We saw coming down the river was pretty much an even balance between the natural mobilisation of phosphate and what mankind is managing to put into the system. So for mankind then it is going to be our fertilisers, which in the previous lecture I talked about the nitrogen phosphorus potassium ratio in these fertilisers, so clearly we're putting phosphorus into fertilisers deliberately. Most of that phosphate then comes from rock phosphate deposits. In particular, birds are able to, in their guano, release a lot of phosphate. That, when it's compacted down, it actually turns into rock phosphate. So a lot of the islands like Nauru and stuff, that's where major mines have been of rock phosphate. We're quite fortunate in our region that near Mount Isa is a major phosphate deposit, a really old phosphate deposit. And Mount Isa then was a major source of sulfuric acid pollution until the somebody put two and two together and said, well, to turn rock phosphate into phosphate fertilizer, you need sulfuric acid. We've got a huge emission of SO2 coming out of the Mount Isa stack. So what we should do is turn that SO2 into sulfuric acid and ship it a few miles down the road to where the rock phosphate deposit is and make ourselves a little phosphate plant, which they now do. So it's reduced the amount of sulfur dioxide pollution of Mount Isa very, very substantially, and they get a product which is commercially viable just down the road. So those sort of phosphate fertilisers are a major source. The other one is phosphate-based detergents. Now most of the household detergents that you use these days are non-phosphate based, so your washing powders for your washing machine. The ones that are used in dishwashers I'm less sort of sure about, to tell you the truth. Has anybody actually managed to track down what exactly is in the dishwashing machines? Yeah, I'm going to do some more hunting around because I have a feeling that they still have a bit of phosphate in them. The reason for using phosphate then is to condition the water so that your detergent is able to operate as a surfactant. We know that the water often has a lot of hardness ions present, magnesium and the calcium. So one of the functions of the phosphate detergent is to sort of deal with those. You can clearly see there you've got multiple anionic sites. In the case of this particular pyrophosphate unit, that's able to bind multiple cations. In the water cycle then, we recall that we had the Redfield cycle taking carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus and hydrogens and combining that into our basic Redfield formula for algae. So the phosphorus is then linked into that cycle, which involves both carbon and nitrogen. The return pathway for phosphorus to the major reservoir is clearly sedimentation and then lithification. So in the water cycle in the ocean, we have got our soluble material, we have got our insoluble material being carried through. That material then cycles through the biology and then eventually some dead biomass accumulates at the bottom of the ocean containing phosphorus and